Fire Logic by Laurie J. Marks. Copyright 2002. This recording is read by the author and is copyright 2007. This is the second part of Chapter 1 of Fire Logic.
Sanjia had already learned that she who crosses between worlds is a stranger everywhere, even in the land of her birth. Having lived for 6 seasons with a Shaftali farm family, she had developed 2 minds and 2 ways of seeing to go with her 2 languages. After that, her own family found her peculiar and said that she stumbled between contradictory cultures and languages like a drunken fool. The speaker had explained that is what it means to be a speaker. Did you think it would be easy or graceful? He had added, no more reassuringly, what you see and know depends on which eyes you see with. Today she had come to understand more clearly why a crosser of boundaries must learn to see through the eyes of strangers. 2 times today the speaker had settled a difference in his favor by constructing an argument from the materials of his opponent's self-interest and values. As they began the journey southward in the company of paladins, she considered in silence the speaker's methods and what he had needed to know about the person he spoke to in order to properly advocate for his people's interests. Now, when he spoke to her about the towns they passed, and described the peculiar ways and customs of the people there, she listened attentively, thinking all the while about the potential usefulness of the information. The paladins with whom they journeyed seemed a random collection. Some were well-equipped and travel-hardened. Others had the pale skin and soft hands of scholars, and their riding gear was creased from having been folded away in trunks. More than half of them seemed to have only recently left their family farm holds. Except for the fact that they all traveled armed, and they shared a propensity for lengthy arcane discussions of philosophy, it might have been difficult to tell that they all were members of the same order. One of the paladins had been riding somewhat separate from the others. A man neither young nor old, he did not eat or drink or join in conversations, and walked away alone when they stopped to rest the horses. "What about him interests you?" the speaker asked Sanjia when he noticed her watching the man. "He is so solitary," she said. "Is that all? You must listen more carefully to your intuition, or you will not survive for long." She considered the lone man who now stood a good distance away, gazing at something beyond the far horizon. "He is not merely sad," she said. "He is complex. He knows so much that it weighs him down, and yet I think he could be merry. The same knowledge that he finds so heavy might also give him joy." The speaker grunted approvingly. "You're guessing, of course. But you're learning to let your guesswork reveal the truth. Now tell me what kind of man you have described." Sanjia considered some more and abruptly felt quite stupid. "Of course, he is a fireblood, like us." "Next time," the speaker said, "it will not take so long for you to realize it." They had neared their journey's end when the solitary man, with apparent effort, began making himself more convivial. Eventually, he dropped back and walked his horse beside the speaker's, and soon had convinced Sanjia's teacher to give a lengthy, detailed exposition of the differences between the Ashawala'i and the Shaftali people. The solitary man's name was Emil. He told them that after 15 years as a paladin, he recently had been pierced with the earring of regard. He self-consciously fingered the two earrings in his right earlobe. "I suppose they'll make me a commander now," he said without enthusiasm. "And what will become of you now that we have no Gadaean or Lilterway's council for you to speak to? How will you advocate for your people?" The speaker said, "In just a few years, these problems will be Zanja's, so perhaps she should answer your question." Zanja was unprepared, but she could not defer to her elders when the speaker made it so clear she must think for herself. "As Shaftal changes, my duties must change as well," she said. "But how could I say how Shaftal is going to change? Perhaps Shaftal will form a new government to which I might be an ambassador, or perhaps the Sionites will." Emma looked rather startled by this grim possibility, but refrained from objecting. "Perhaps Shaftal will become a land of violence and confusion," she continued, "and I will keep that turmoil from affecting my people." The speaker grunted with approval, which encouraged her to add, "Perhaps my duties will become impossible to fulfill." "Perhaps they will," the speaker said. But Emil, who seemed much impressed by her answer, said, "Impossible? For a woman of less talent, perhaps." The Ashawala'i did not compliment each other so directly. Sanja glanced confusedly at the speaker, who said on her behalf, "You are too kind." "We have arrived," said Emil, standing up in his stirrups to see better. For some time they had been traveling among wagons laden with food being transported from the farmholds of the region. Now the woods had opened up into a vast clearing filled with paladin encampments, wagons, animals, equipment, and food tents. A harried woman directed the wagons in one direction and the paladins in another. At the top of the hill before them stood a complex of buildings, a paladin charter house. "The generals will be there," said Emil, "and that's where I must go to learn my future." He took each of their hands in turn as he bid them farewell. "Perhaps we'll meet again," he said, and rode up the hill. Along with the hundreds of fretful paladins, seething with rumors and tales of fresh disaster, the speaker and his student camped upon the hillside. Before nightfall, a wagonload of travelers, accompanied by a handful of paladin outriders, made its way up the dusty track from the highway. Word swept through the gathered paladins like the turning of a tide. The new arrivals were refugees from the House of Lilterways, and Counselor Mabon traveled among them unharmed. "I believe this rumor," said the speaker thoughtfully. The House of Lilterways was like a city within a building, with hundreds of residents and plenty of defenders. I find it difficult to believe that no one at all escaped the attack. And Counselor Mabon has always struck me as someone who would survive, whenever survival is possible. Though the gathered paladins crowded expectantly around the charter house, the hour grew late without any fresh news, and finally the companies began making ready for bed. Zanja and the speaker also slept, but he awoke her before dawn, and they quietly made their way among sleeping paladins and smoldering campfires. The blacksmith slept beside his anvil. The horses dozed in their field. The guard at the hostel door seemed asleep on his feet and blinked at them blearily when the speaker addressed him. "Tell Counselor Mabon that the speaker of the Ashawala'i wishes to discuss the future with her." "You would disturb her rest," slurred the sleepy guard. "I know she rises early before the sun, if she sleeps at all." The guard sent for a paladin officer, who inquired about the speaker's business, and informed him that Mabon was not to be disturbed. Eventually, though, the speaker's courteous persistence was rewarded, and they were brought into the silent, plain building and shown to a disarranged room where a brisk fire burned and a woman sat busily writing at a desk scattered with candle stubs. "Speaker," she greeted him without setting down her pen. "Counselor, my apprentice, Sanja Natarwain." Sanja, remembering that the Shaftali do not kneel to their elders, bowed instead. "I think that's a fresh pot of tea," Mabon said distractedly. Sanja served the tea in the Shaftali style, and the counselor took no notice of her, even when Sanja handed her the cup and offered her the plate of bread. The speaker politely expressed his delight at finding Mabon unharmed, and his sadness and concern at hearing of the Gedeon's passing. Apparently finished writing, Mabon rose from the desk and said impatiently, "Harald Gedeon was a fool who brought this disaster upon his own people with his obstinacy and idiocy. Now I alone am left to rebuild this ruin. Do you think I even want to hear his name spoken again? I only wish he had died sooner." She paced angrily to the fireplace, drained her teacup, and held it out for Sanja to refill. "Speaker, I will instruct my people to treat you as a paladin commander so that you may be as informed as anyone is about Harald's death and the fall and our plans for the future. Now, as I am the only governor left alive, I am being taken into hiding until we can rebuild our strength and organize the defense of Shaftal." "I'm certain you intend no insult," the speaker said, "but I am as important to my people's survival as you are to yours. Surely you can spare a little time to advise me." There was a silence. Mabon took a piece of bread from the plate Sanja offered her, and this time seemed, momentarily, to see her. "Are all the speaker's firebloods?" Though it was surprising to be assessed so accurately with a mere glance, Sanja replied, "Yes, counselor. A fireblood's insight is useful when wandering a strange land." Mabon looked away, seeming to dismiss not just her, but all fire talent. She said to the speaker, "I suggest you tell your people to guard their passes. And you should make certain the Ashawala'i remain beneath the notice of the Sinites. They kill those who threaten them, exploit those who can help them, and ignore everyone else. Make certain that your people are ignored." The door opened, and a young woman somewhat older than Sanja entered. She wore black, bore arms, and her hair was cut short like a paladin's. Her gaze paused briefly on Sanja, leaving her feeling like a pot that has been scoured. "Madam Counselor, we are ready to leave. Will you pack up these papers for me?" Mabon went out to speak to someone in the hall and returned to tell the speaker the name of the commander she had designated to deal with his concerns. She said to the young woman in black, "They are gathering the paladins so I can address them before I leave. You travel ahead in the wagon, and I'll catch up with you on horseback." "Yes, Madam Counselor." The speaker scarcely had time to thank Mabon. The counselor was swept out into a crush of commanders who had arrived to escort her to address what remained of her army. The door shut behind her, and now the room lay silent. The speaker sighed as if with relief, and Sanja hurried over to pour him a fresh cup of tea as he sat down in an armchair by the fireplace. He sipped from his cup, gazing into the flames as his damp boots began to steam. Papers rustled as the young woman in black ordered them meticulously into a pile, and then wrapped them and tied them in a leather cover. Sanja stood by the tea table and watched her covertly. Sanja could not easily categorize this discomforting young woman. She seemed hard and tired, which might be expected in one who had recently survived and escaped a devastating attack. Though she looked like a paladin, Sanja did not think she was one. She was old enough to have taken her vows, but her earlobe was unadorned. Plus, she had an unsettling quality that made Sanja suspect an elemental talent, though she did not recognize which element. The young woman looked up and caught Sanja's eye. Her gaze was almost unendurable. Trying to back away, Sanja stumbled into the tea table. The young woman turned aside without a word, picked up the packet of papers, and left the room. The speaker said, without removing his gaze from the fire, "We have none like her among the Ashawala'i." "She is an Airblood?" Sanja guessed, for the Ashawala'i had only earth and fire clans, and waterbloods were rare everywhere. "She is an air elemental and a truthkin. Now you know why the truthkins are so feared." Sanja still felt the effects of that young woman's regard, even though she was no longer in the room. "Yes, I felt as though her look invaded me. In time, she'll learn more subtlety, I assume. Do you want to hear the counselor's speech? I myself have no interest in it." "I suppose she'll be inspiring," Sanja said. The speaker glanced up at her, amused. "I have never learned to love Mabon either, though she has many admirers. Have a cup of tea, at least. You may never again taste green tea as fine as this, and if we don't drink it, it will go to waste." She poured herself a cup and went over to the room's one small window to look out at the dawning day. The window viewed the back of the charter house, an unkempt garden of herbs and flowers that were just starting to bloom, and the track that led to the stables. As she watched, a wagon was brought out and loaded with baggage and people. The last to arrive was the young truthkin, still carrying the packet of papers, but now escorting another person. Sanja pressed her face to the window pane, intrigued by the strange appearance of the truthkin's companion. She was very tall, taller than a grown man, but thin and gangly as an adolescent in a growth spurt, with big hands and feet, wearing clothing she seemed to have outgrown. Her hair was a tangled bird's nest. The truthkin walked her to the wagon as if she were a prisoner or a puppet. On the tall woman's face was an expression of blank, stunned despair. Sanja watched the wagon roll away. She did not know what she had seen, but she knew that it was terrible. She remained at the window long after the wagon had passed out of sight.
End of the second part of Fire Logic, Chapter 1. Written and recorded by Laurie J. Marks. Copyrights 2002-2007. All rights reserved.